Empower Radio. Hi there, I'm Wendy. Thank you for tuning in, for joining the conversation in progress, because it's been going on in our heads before we ever opened the microphone. Matt, my producer, is diligently behind the scenes making sure the magic all happens the way it should. In case anything is messed up, he's there to fix it. I have a guest today who is a tremendous intuitive and a really creative when it comes to artwork, creative imagineer, when she does all of this stuff with her, and you'll get to the website, elaineclayton.com, and you'll see what I'm talking about when you go there. Psychic readings, intuitive readings, but she draws, and she makes the dots connect in a visual way. And so I was really, really looking forward to talking with her, because when she did the book, and the book's called Making Marks, and that's just, like the tip of the iceberg with her, I thought, oh my gosh, she says, here, anybody can do this. You just, do this linear streaming and draw it out, and we'll figure out what that means. I'm thinking, and she sees figures and shapes and actual beings and things and creatures in these lines as she draws them together. And it's brilliant. And yet when she said, here, it's just easy, you'll do it. And I'm like, I didn't see what she saw when she put the color to the lines and the images. Elaine, it is so fun to see your work. So I'm really enthusiastic, obviously. I'm excited about talking with you about what you do and how you do it.
Well, I am so thrilled to be able to have this opportunity with you. I really am honored. Thank you.
Well, when I got, Lisa has said, hey, talk to Elaine. She's got this new book out. And I'm like, okay, I'll see. And I'm thinking, well, what can I do with art? And I'm like, oh, well, as soon as I got the book, okay, yeah, I think I can see. The process you use, it's a free form intuition, and you just kind of go with the flow. How did you get started? Because this is the thing that, doodles make sense with you.
They do, and I really appreciate what you said about, before I answer what you just said a few moments ago about, what it was I saw in a drawing wasn't necessarily what you saw, which is exactly how it works, because you would probably see things I wouldn't see also, and that's part of the beauty of it. But it's training ourselves to just have a visual, intuitive way of seeing, we're kind of trained away from that in school. We're not really allowed to wander like that with our gaze. We have to be on task all the time. So the way I got started was, there are two ways. One is how we all got started originally, by being little natural born imagineers. I love that word, imagineer. We're all born creators, And so one of the first impulses we have is to make marks with our fingers. Everybody probably remembers maybe getting in trouble at least once for drawing on the walls or somewhere where you weren't supposed to. And then so there's that massively fun, crazy thrill of being able to change a surface by making marks on it, and we are born with that. So where I wanted to recapture it for everyone, I've wanted to for years in various ways, and I do children's books, so I've always traveled around to libraries and schools, and I taught myself to taught kindergarteners and mostly elementary age kids, but teaching people how to kind of recapture that sense of freedom with drawing, with making marks, since in school, almost every mark we make gets judged in some way.
Yeah.
It gets graded. So that natural, thrilling spirit we were born with and we had until we were probably around 5 or 6, just, it's time to recapture it. But the way I arrived to it as an intuitive was, I'd been doing intuitive readings for a while, and I always go to readers. I just think it's fun to do. And I grew up playing psychic games with people in my family, and it was just sort of one of our favorite subjects that got passed down through the family. And so I had a sense for what is ethical, I guess, by my own standards, the way I was taught. And I discovered more than one time that when I would go to a reader, sometimes they'd be really gifted, like amazing, but I noticed that they would throw in something scary You know, and it's manipulative because often we go to people when we're a little bit vulnerable. You know, like someone will go to a psychic because they just broke up with someone, or they're madly in love with someone, or they're afraid. You know, all kinds of things happen to all of us, and we kind of want to know things. Mm-hmm. And I just remember this one day I had a phone reading with someone I was intrigued by, and she said something like, "Your grandmother is trying to get through to you, but she can't get through to you." And I thought, well, you know, that didn't sound right to me. And plus, I thought, well, what do you do with that, right, if someone says that? Because it puts them in the position of, I am the one who can help your grandmother get through to you.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, right? And so I didn't feel that was true because I have dreams. I will say prayers. I will ask for intervention. If my grandmother needs to get through to me, and it's in my worldview, and it's the will of the great spirit, you know, the supreme being, then there is nothing that will stop that message from getting through to me. So I don't really have to have someone tell me something like that. The other things they would say is something like, you have negative energy in your, you know, or someone has put a curse on you. You know, I've heard all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I thought, well, you know what? What? I was so angry that a talented person could do that. And this was like the fourth or fifth time I had heard stuff like that since I was really pretty young in my 20s. I thought, you know, what am I doing when I do readings? What am I doing when I'm being psychic for someone? And I realized that what I'm doing is I'll get an image or a feeling. Mostly I'm very visual, so an image, like a movie almost in my mind. And I don't question it. I'll just trust it, and then I'll tell them what I think it means. Or I'll look at, let's say if you were to use a deck of cards or you look at the clouds or whatever it is, I just understand that certain things mean certain things to me, and I know what they are. So like the color red, I already know what it means to me. So I've had a dialogue with myself about what things mean, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, if that's mainly what I'm doing, I'll just share what I do with others, and that they can go to someone if they want to, but they don't have to. And so one day I was scheduled to have a reading with someone I didn't know anything about the person at all. And I thought, I'm going to go into a zone here. And I automatically just started to do what we would call a scribble. You know, I closed my eyes and I just meandered with the pencil all around, thinking of this reading and what, you know, what needed to maybe come about for the reading. And when the person called, you know, I thought, how am I going to tell her this stuff? This is weird stuff. Because in the drawing, I looked and I saw what looked to me like a grandmother, and it looked like she was in the hospital because there were all these tubes and things, and then it looked like she only had one leg. And I thought, this is nuts, you know. I don't know. It's a shot in the dark. So when she called, I said, you know, I just want you to know I'm an artist too, and when I was meditating for you, I drew something, and can I just tell you what I saw? And she said, yeah, sure. And then I described the grandmother and the grandmother in the hospital, and then I said, and she only has one leg. And this woman said, yeah, they took one of my grandmother's legs when she was in the hospital. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is real. And then when I turned the drawing, I saw something else that also seemed a little bit out there, but that seemed to be, she related to that too, almost not symbolically, literally, just like with the grandmother. And from that point on, every time I did a reading, I would do this meditation first. And I started calling it stream drawing, and I felt like I'm getting into the stream of consciousness flow, like we all did when we were little, when we were really young and there was nothing blocking us. So, and the stream of consciousness delivers knowing to us when we dream. So why not when we're awake also?
Well, in the book, you also give details about the a little bit more in depth about what's going on with the pictures that you're getting. Again, ElaineClayton.com for the information on art, but the book Making Marks is what we're referring to and talking about this streaming. And see, that's where you touched on your talent, your focus, your gift, your window to bring things through that made perfect sense to you. And that, you know, each person has their own code. And that's mm-hmm. where I think you just went completely, you know, 100%, oh gosh, spot on. Say, this is how it works. And it's really amazing to see your process, because that's what I'm seeing as I work through this book and see how you have honed your skill.
Well, I love that. That's very sweet for you to say. And I'm totally thrilled and excited, you know, to hear about whatever your processes are. And because you talk about connecting the dots. I've heard you say that before. And that's a perfect image, because, you know, that game of connecting the dots, you see random dots, they don't mean anything. And then when you connect them, once you start connecting them, they mean a lot, because you start to see what's there, but you couldn't see it before. And I think it would be really exciting, you know, both to hear if you experiment with this and what it would be like for you, but also just how do things come to you, you know, in your own intuitive experiences. Because I think that what makes us unique, well, Edgar Cayce is a favorite since I was really young, and he talks about ideals, you know, like each of us having our own ideals and never to be separated from them, because they're really who we are at our soul essence. And you're right, drawing for me is a thing I just love doing it. I'm alive doing it. I'm balanced doing it. All kinds of different ways of drawing, not just the stream drawing. But that's one of my ideals, is to be able to have a life where you can draw any time and all the time. And someone else's ideals might be, you know, who knows, like maybe even teaching, you know, or flying, you know, somehow some kind of sport.
Yeah.
You know, that really makes them feel connected to themselves, to their higher self. And I think when we celebrate what those ideals are, instead of feeling like we don't have them, because sometimes we idealize things that we feel like we don't have, and then we connect more so to the lack of it. Like,
yes.
You know what I mean? Like, yes. Like let's say I love castles, and I don't have a castle.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say I just love castles, and I'm intrigued by them and all that. And if I do what Edgar Cayce says, you know, like, let's say I'm making a list of my ideals, and I think of castles, and I love them, and I start to daydream, and in my own imagination, I do have a castle, then I'm really connecting to the soul energy that is purest and strongest. And in some way, I will have a castle in 3D in some way, you know, eventually. But if I hold it away from myself, like, yeah, I love castles, but I'll never have one.
Oh, yeah. Oops.
You know,
oops.
And then I'll never have one, you know. So I think that's kind of fun, to connect all these things that we do creatively with what our ideals are.
When I tell stories, or when I listen to people, or when I hear things, or I plan to do an interview, or I plan to do some kind of a story, anything, what I have learned through broadcasting and through storytelling is, no matter how good your story is, you have to remember the last word, because that's how you end it, and that's what people are stuck with when you
mm-hmm.
leave. So
mm-hmm.
you can lift it, or you can, you know, submerge it and bury it. But what mm-hmm. that energy does to people when you do that to them is very powerful and subtle on many levels. So I always focus on trying to leave it with a lift, with a higher word and an elevation. And that's, if I'm successful, then that's going to carry forward and give people a little bit more energy, fuel,
mm-hmm.
you know, go juice, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm,
to
mm-hmm.
feel that we're talking about will work, or that they've got their own answer and they can come up with a solution. But that's something I learned a long time ago in the way that it made me feel. And I think part of it was, you know, seeing the movie Bambi.
Oh, yeah, that's so true.
Yeah. Like, oh,
well,
man.
I love that you're saying this, because we do have a responsibility to each other. Our art forms do have an impact, and though we're not always responsible for the way in which someone else perceives it, what you're saying is really great, because it's the intention and the conscious understanding, I guess, of how we do impact each other. And I feel like when you're talking about ending the story in an up way, you know, rather than a shadowy sort of way, you're not owning it. You're allowing them to own it, almost as if to say, and the story is over, but it's not over.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which is an open door access, which is great.
Yeah, that's part of it. It's opening something somewhere has opened, and because you know we may finish a book, but we haven't finished our story, and mm-hmm. that's where it goes on and elevates. And when I was looking at your book and seeing the doodles and the pictures in the sidelines, it's like, oh my gosh, this is the way I write. This is the way I do. I love putting the doodles on the sidelines and in my journals when I was doing that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So while you're writing, you will stream draw basically along
yes.
the margins and stuff like we used to do in school. Remember that?
Yes, yes.
And then we could get in trouble for that. Are you drawing? You know? No.
Uh-huh.
Let me see your paper, you know. Yeah, you're drawing. I think that's a drawing of me. I do not have a mustache. You know, it'd be like all kinds of trouble, you know.
Didn't see the horns before I erased them.
yeah, quickly, you know. But I love that because it feels like you were feeling that stream of consciousness already just sort of, and it's calming. It's so calming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the back of the book, Simon & Schuster, the publishers, they put a fact here about, and I don't use the word doodle personally. I sort of funny because I felt like when I was being a serious artist, people would go, oh, I like your doodles. And I, you know, would think, you know what, though? This is a profound thing that even the babies, when they're doing it, it's really profound because it makes them feel so complete and thrilled and you know, creative. So maybe that word is sort of makes us feel like it's not a real thing. But it says, this is what the publishers put. They said, as you delve into making marks, you'll not only feel more focused, people retain 29% more information when they quote-unquote doodle. So that's kind of cool. That means, you know, something awesome is going on with our ability to take in information when we're in that zone of, you know, kind of drawing on the margins.
It's like a computer programming. You're sequencing and you're looking at a connection, and that happens to be, which is really, really funny. It makes the dream make sense this morning. I usually have, in some way, shape, or form, a connect with my guests.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be a vision. It will be an inspiration. It will be a dream. And somehow we'll have a conversation. This morning there was a conversation. There was an image of a poster. And this poster in front of me, and it was just really quick because it was not the dream. It was the vision. And the poster rolled out in front of me. And on it were all these little quirky things like a language. And I'm thinking, but they weren't letters. They were like spots and dots and little quirks and commas and asterisks and all these little, those kind of things. I thought, oh my gosh, this is a code. And it's
that's so cool.
Yeah. Well, and so in talking with you, then I'm seeing this coded language that we're using that has nothing to do with words. It has it, and it's images, but it isn't. It's little bites of information. And that's what, you know, we're really connecting on that other level that we don't, in our language, we don't acknowledge that that's going on all the time. It's like walking around somebody and having their information stream. And if you picture, you know, Pigpen, the cloud, only not dirt.
But the aura of light and other impactful energies.
It's context. It's those are bits and pieces of information, and they go with us wherever we go. And so that was like, oh my gosh, oh, that's what, and it didn't make sense until I'm putting the dots together. And
I
going,
love it.
Oh, that's the information cloud. Oh, wow. You know,
yes.
So that's what seeing was a visual of these symbols and these little codes that don't have anything, they don't have any meaning, but they still pack a lot of content that we've just basically put into smaller form so we can bring it out when it is most useful for most, in the best case scenario.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of cool about just the personality of each of the marks and symbols, because we don't have to know what they mean to get the energy from them or the download of like telepathic knowledge, you know, and I agree with you. I was always exhausted because I, from a very, you know, as long as I can remember, I saw the glow around people, you know. I didn't know it was called aura, an aura, until I was in my early 20s. And my mind was constantly picking up on all the stuff they didn't want you to be focused on. So I was trying to do both all the time because I couldn't not be me, right?
And yes.
Yeah, and I'm fascinated. One of my favorite things is to read near-death experiences. When my dad gave me the book when I was about 15, of Raymond Moody's first case that he studied, the modern, you know, study of what he coined near-death experiences, and it was the book called Return from Tomorrow by Dr. George Ritchie. And it just opened up. I just couldn't get enough. I can't still. I ravenously read these. And one of the things that they say, commonly, that the experience is what we experience, like what you just described in your meditation image, what happens often in dreams and spiritual communications, is things don't always have to be verbalized for us to get it, right? It's
yes.
Telepathic. So someone will say, oh, you know, all of a sudden I was hovering in the corner of the room. Doctors were rushing around, you know, I had been pronounced dead, and my grandmother, all glowing, you know, floated in, and we started to travel, and she told me things, but not with her mouth the way we do on Earth. And so I'm thinking that's the most fun thing for us to all realize, is we cover up a lot of what's really going on with language. You know, we have our cadences and our vernacular and our social norms, and we sort of do a lot of stuff, and meanwhile, we're also on some animalistic level as well as spiritual level, we're getting all the other content, and or we're overlooking it. We've been trained to overlook it, you know, because if you weren't listening to the teacher, you were in trouble or you would get humiliated. So, and you could be in danger sometimes when you're not listening, too. I mean, there's that. But mainly, there's this psychic, intuitive, spiritual knowledge that is carried within each of us, and we are giving it out, and the world is giving us info, and, you know, are we tuned in or not? You know, I think it's just so fascinating to realize that from what they say, the spirit world doesn't even notice how we say things so much as what is really behind it, what's the intention behind what we say.
Yes.
So you can't fool God, let's put it that way. You can say all the flowery things you want, but God is going to get the impact of your actual real meaning, you know, what you're really thinking.
Well, in that non-corporeal state, and I've been in, you know, where I was just a little glowing yellow ball, and also out of body, and also just in this state where everything was connected, and that was completely, totally blissful.
Mm-hmm. But I've had that too. Isn't it utter bliss?
Awesome. I thought, well, okay, I'll stay here. Yeah, this
yes.
is, and I thought, oh no, I know, I have to get back.
It was and like, there's no sense of time. It's just, everything just is.
Everything else.
It's hard to find words to describe the bliss of it.
Right. Right. And the thing, when I was in that state, my guides did this. They helped me through, which it's the most unusual thing to have. I didn't even think it was possible, but I was working on learning a channel. My aunt was into a hypnotic state, and they told me, of course, this is telepathic. It's just a language that you don't even have to speak it. It's there. They said, you're going to count to two. And so I have to count to two as my aunt watches me. And And I thought, well, yeah, right. There's nothing going to happen and count it two. This is just
right.
So he's sitting there going, meh, 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 meh. Okay. Little wet blanket. And then my aunt, you know, so she's across from me. I said one. I'm like, gone. I'm gone. I'm completely gone. And then I realized, as you know, as this thing is happening, and it's just like so fantastic. And there's not me. It's everything. It's beyond anything you can ever even, you know, in conceptualize. And so with that, and I realized I have to say two. And I'm thinking faster than I've ever thought in my, well, except under, you know, high stress when you're afraid
you're
going to die.
When you know I've got to
get the heck out of Dodge. Then this thing happened, and I thought, I've got to say two. If I don't, I won't come back because I will have made that split. And I knew that would be dangerous. And so I thought, and like at the same time, I'm feeling all this angst of no, yes, oh wow, what do? I said two, and my aunt's across to me going,
Yeah, that's so cool.
So you astraled
immediately.
Yeah, it's just so that whole scenario is rather odd, but at the same time, so it's like, you know, you're multidimensional as you're working through these issues, and you're able to be present on many different levels when you are in that higher plane of awareness. And so that's what was being demonstrated as I went through that. But with that, then the colors, that's how we're identified from that other plane. And so the things that come to us, the things that manifest, are also working on these colors. I saw on your website when you were standing next to, we've got to take a break.
Time goes by so fast.
Okay, we'll be back. Because Hank Heron, I want you to tell about that one. Okay, cool. We'll be back. Elaine Clayton and more Conscious Living on Empower Radio.
Hey, America, we need to have a little talk. I don't know if you've noticed, but we got a lot of food in this country. A lot of peaches, a lot of corn, a lot of apples, a lot of everything. We've got so much food that we can't even eat it all. So if we got all this extra food, how are 17 million kids in America struggling with hunger? I just don't get it. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks gathers surplus food and gets it to the hungry kids who need it. They can get you food even if you live in Idaho or Alaska or somewhere crazy like that. This isn't complicated. We got extra food and we've got hungry kids. Feeding America's done the math. Now it's your turn. Support Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. I know you got internet on your phone, so what are you waiting for? We can't do it without your help. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Dave, what are you doing?
Just sending a gift to Dave 2037.
Who?
Me in the future. I save a little money from every paycheck as a gift to Dave 2037, so he can spend it on things like anti-gravity boots or a hologram Doberman. Something cool like that. I think Dave 2037 deserves it. He worked hard. What are you getting Steve 2037?
I guess I was thinking Steve 2037 would just fend for himself.
Well, all right. But don't expect to be borrowing my anti-gravity boots.
You want to have money in your future? You got to start saving now. Putting some money from every paycheck into a savings account or contributing to your 401k can make a big difference later. Put away a few bucks, feel like a million bucks. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's feedthepig.org.
Hey, let's just hope Steve 2037 doesn't get his hands on a cold time machine, because he is going to come back here and knock some sense into you.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
You are a waste, a loser. Everyone hates you. Why don't you just stay in your car and keep driving? I'm serious. Drive until you run out of gas, then get out of your car and walk until you find someone who doesn't think you're dumber than bricks. Could take a while, but at least all that walking might burn a couple of calories.
You may not witness bullying like this every day. Your kids do. They want to help, but they don't know how. Visit StopBullying.gov to learn safe, simple ways your child can help stop bullying. Be more than a bystander at StopBullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
I feel like I'm choking.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
You know how to react to their asthma attacks. Here's how to prevent them. Visit www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Elaine Clayton, who's been all sorts of art professional, children's books, fine art, working with stream drawing is what we're talking about with the book right now that I've got in front of me, Making Marks. And it's just, it's really so fun to see how this process unfolds and how you can get started. And see, when we use the word doodle earlier, that's for me, it makes it, the pressure is off. It's
right,
just
yes, I appreciate that too. That's why I shouldn't be too, you know, hey, don't use that word. You know, it's not really fair because it's got such a light, playful sound that it does help people loosen up, I'm sure, you know, to just enjoy it.
After all,
I just wish that people knew that it was a profound undertaking.
And that's okay. That's the thing with the line drawings, and because you haven't been classically trained to paint and put things together, use the right color combos and all that, it's like, well, this isn't work and it doesn't have a purpose. But that's bogus. I mean, one of the people I really admired, Grandma Layton, didn't start painting until she was, I think, 80. Mm-hmm. And the way that she also learned how to do this was to draw with the opposite hand so that she wouldn't be stuck judging and doing it the perfect way. And it was so for me, I thought, I'm going to study somebody who does it the way it isn't supposed to be done.
Yeah, because I agree with that.
Yeah.
I use that non-dominant hand thing is so important, and even eyes closed for this process, because I was working even with kids when they are drawing with their non-dominant hand and they can see what they're doing. They often will hesitate, and then they get stuck because they're just so afraid of being, you know, criticized or something. You know, it's that inner editor or you know, whatever voice they're used to hearing. So this is even kind of more crazy in a way that you close your eyes while you do it. But it feels great, though. Doesn't it feel like a release? You know,
yes.
It just feels like, ah.
Well, see, that was hers. It was blind contour drawing. You look at the paper for a few seconds to get your reference, and then you draw. And then it's a feeling that you put
right,
into this.
Right, right. Well, and the thing I would do with the kids, since the 1980s, of course, because I came out of art school and working in progressive independent schools, as well as being like an artist in residence in public schools, I didn't call them blind contour. I called them gesture drawings because someone would pose making a gesture, and kids love to do that. So you could put two kids, hey, you guys, you know, make some gesture, and then they would whisper in each other's ears and then decide what the gesture would be. And then the person at the easel, just like what you said, they're going to draw non-dominant hand and also not looking at what they're doing, but draw the gesture of one of the people by doing the contour line to show the shape. And so the whole idea was to see how that would feel to be that person. That's how what I said. I said it, you know, you have empathy. We have to feel for each other. And when you draw and you look at someone else and you draw the shape of their contour, you can start to feel what it feels like to be them. And the whole other rest of the class would have to sort of whisper count 20 slowly, because that's all the time that the mark maker had at the easel. That was the other thing I realized, is if they went a little bit faster, they didn't hesitate as much. If they slow down, they stop.
Yeah, they're thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was one of my favorite things to do. I mean, for, I hate to say how many decades now, but I guess it really isn't 20. It's more like 30 years, you know.
That's okay. That's one thing. I think people, you're at a disadvantage when you're younger, because there's so much temperance and so much seasoning that comes with doing things the wrong way or being exposed to people that you could never have anticipated would give you a key, a clue, an inspiration. It's like, oh my gosh, like Grandma Layton, you know, that wasn't something I caught onto when I was younger. I was concerned more about, is this going to measure up? Is this
exactly? Exactly. It's very stressful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it upsets me, because if you're in constant fear of threat of humiliation or being caught out wrong, and that is exactly the culture. It's exactly what it was like. Some people were successful at it because they were very rarely wrong and they were just really good at being on task. And other people, you know, it varied. And but if you you don't get to use both your empathic, intuitive, your emotional part of the brain as well as the rational and logical, then you can't learn all those subjects as well. You really aren't present. You're shut down. You're in fear. So hopefully, you know, we've gotten better over time. And there are a lot of people teaching in ways to absolutely undo all that. But I don't know if it will ever be perfect. But if we're aware of it and have a commitment to not make school be scary, then yeah. We're way better off. I mean, look at us now. We have an epidemic of total lack of empathy. And
well,
it's shocking, you know. So
and that's
here we
the
are.
Condition. That's the conditioning. But so part of that, the pendulum always swings the other way. It's like when you were talking about in your bio, you talk about being present with Hank Aaron. And this is the thing that distracts us as empaths or intuitives or, you know, psychic, whatever you want to call it. There's this other awareness we have going on where this world is offering us so much more visual stimulation than just whatever's in front of us on our plate. And here's Hank Aaron. And instead of, you know, looking at whatever he was focusing on at that moment, you're seeing what was around him.
Mm-hmm. That was just so amazing. Okay, so this was in the mid-80s, and I was teaching at an independent school, and we were all on the floor in a room that was like a gym. They called it the multi-purpose room. And so we were sitting on the floor, and this is in Atlanta, and Hank Aaron was there. And so he was a foot in front of me. So I'm looking up at this awesome hero, you know, and seeing the familiar kind of yellow-white glow around his head. Often that's mainly, you know, what I'll see is just that sort of golden light. And mm-hmm. I'm enjoying that. And then I'm looking over across the room, and a coach at the school was so excited. He was sitting down. He had his Hank Aaron bat from childhood in his hands. I was shocked. I saw all the rainbow of colors around him glowing out in bands, kind of like really like a rainbow around his whole body. Mm-hmm. And it went wide out. And I was so, wow. And in my immature mind at the time, because I was in my early 20s, I thought, wait a minute, this guy, he's glowing more than Hank Aaron, but Hank Aaron is the big star, so wouldn't he be glowing more? You know, it's so funny how you get conditioned to think, you know, stars yeah. glow more. Some of us glow more than others. Well, so I leaned over. I was teaching with an African-American woman, and I said, hey, listen, look, I'm seeing this glow around Hank Aaron, and then, but Jackie's over there's huge and all these colors. And she said, girl, you are seeing auras. And it was so great. The next day she brought me a book all about auras. I had never even heard of it before. I thought everyone saw the way I saw.
Oh, yeah.
It started, and I think everyone can, but it started me on an understanding of who I was as a learner, and I was in the perfect school for it because that's what they were all about. But it was a sad thing in a way that it took me all those years to understand that there wasn't anything wrong with me. I just was focused in a different way than they wanted me to be, I guess. But
yeah.
So that was a great thing that happened.
That's that seasoning, because you have to get rid of some of the stuff. I mean, we start out with this mold of, okay, the teacher, this is how it should, well, first you get here as your kid and you see all this really cool stuff. And then they say, no, it doesn't exist. You can't tell people you see that because they're going to think you're crazy. Okay. So just get that off your plate. So I had to let some of that stuff go away and mm-hmm. then get into what I was supposed to be learning, which was mm-hmm. sometimes distracting because the other stuff
yeah,
was more
very distracting and yeah. exhausting. Yeah.
And so that's the programming, though, because we have to be in some way, shape, or form indoctrinated into whatever social culture we have been born into to see if we want to stay there or branch out. And so from there, once you get free from that particular compartment, then you can go out and then start adding and embellishing. And when we do that, then we start realizing, oh, my gosh, there's so much more here than I realized. And being around people, it was perfect. You're right there. She hands you the book. You wouldn't have had the conversation unless you said, well, this is really cool. And the rainbows, that's what we do when we go to people who are, I believe, spiritual leaders. They may have this wonderful divine glow, mm-hmm. But what they do is they activate others. And so being in their presence, when you go into a room with somebody who's just extraordinary in their practice or in their presence, and you feel this like this little buzz. And then if you're excited about something that they gave to you, like your coach was with Hank Aaron, he was absolutely, obviously, he adored him and he was so in awe that he was just on fire with that spirit energy. And to me, at least this is the way I describe it when I, you know, put it in words. And that's what we do. That's what you're doing right now. I'm experiencing that on fire with you because there's so many things in your book and in the way that you link the pictures, the lines, the drawings with the thoughts and the ideas and the intuition that resonate for me that I do in a way that I don't even think about. And here it is in a book. It's like, oh my gosh. Oh, wow. Here's me.
Don't you love it when you can feel, and I love hearing you say that you relate to it because then I get that we speak a similar language then, and we're getting it. And you're right, we grow up, a lot of us grow up without being able to have very many of those conversations at all, even to feel reinforced by it. Or people, you know, like when I was talking about the NDEs, people can't even tell their loved ones about them sometimes because they'll think that. It's changing. We're all starting to be, you know, a lot more intuitive than we were. I laugh because when I first started being out there with it, I mean, I always was as an artist and all that, but as a reader, you know, being public as a reader, within a year or two, they started to use words like intuitive in TV commercials.
Mm-hmm.
That would have never been part of the dialogue. Before.
No, it would have basically made you, it would be a discredit.
Absolutely. And so how stupid have we been, you know? Mm-hmm. But I'm so glad that we can find each other and reinforce because it's loving, positive energy. It's reminding us that we're really all connected. And that's the other thing about like seeing people's auras is, sometimes someone won't like someone or they've had a hard time or maybe someone has been really negative and done bad things or harsh things that have hurt others. And you think, well, they don't have an aura or they wouldn't glow, you know. But that's not true either. And we don't really know all of the reasons and the soul lessons of each of us. So, you know, I've had people say, well, kind of like when I was young and thought Hank Aaron would glow more. You're right. When someone's very arrived at and complete in their spiritual maturity, you feel it. And then when someone isn't, maybe you feel that too. But there's still no way to, I think, ever know fully what someone's soul is doing and how they're doing it and their purpose. So.
Yeah.
Sometimes I've had to tell people, no, the other person did glow just as much as anyone else, you know, and that's not to say that you might not see, you know, maybe some shadow or something in an aura. I'm not saying that. It's just that I think we can be hurt in life and then kind of almost dismiss other people, but their souls are complex and on a journey just like we are on ours, so...
Some,
kind of interesting.
The way I do it, because the minute we fall back into that judgment thing of thinking that, okay, well, that because I've seen this, then this is not a good thing and they're lesser than, they have no value. And I go back into it and I think each one has a purpose. Sometimes we're here to be a catalyst and that action may require a negative input to get somebody else to step up to the plate and say,
well,
Look what happens.
Yeah. And I love that you said step up to the plate because that's such a baseball thing. But and we're talking about Hank Aaron. But like when if those readers hadn't sort of been little sneaky, tricky, you know, let me hook you in and charge you a lot of money to light a candle for you and say a prayer for you, if they hadn't been doing what they're doing, I wouldn't have even done these books. And that books aren't easy to do. They're
no.
Yeah.
I know.
I probably needed that. I needed to feel like, you know, hey, this is really wrong in my understanding of what's ethical. This is a wrong practice. So that got me motivated. So isn't that interesting how the shadows sometimes do motivate us?
Yeah, And that's there's always a purpose. There's always a purpose. So instead of, you know, worrying about what worked and what didn't and who's good and who's bad, mm-hmm. it's that what's the next step? There was a thing because of all the things that are happening right now in the world, on the world plan. There was a beautiful, a guy on Twitter shared his story about Mr. Rogers. And you don't know where the story is going to go, but he said that he always, you know, what do you do? What do you tell the kids when things like this happen that are beyond their their control and they cause fear and the news just, you know, just constantly streams fear. Mm-hmm. And then the kids are going, oh my gosh. So somebody has to step up. And he said his mom told him, when he was little, that there were always helpers. Look for the helpers. Mm-hmm. Look for people who are helping. And then Mr. Rogers comes into it because at one point he really loved Mr. Rogers and he had a chance encounter in an elevator.
Oh, and my gosh.
He talked to him and he said he had been really at college and distraught and things weren't going well. And so they're in the elevator and he was in awe and, you know, thought, you know, Fred Rogers was going to have could sense his geek out moment coming.
Mm-hmm. I love it though.
So they step out and then, they're talking and they're going to step out of the elevator and leave. But instead Fred Rogers asked him, so what was it? What was it that made you feel that this, you know, what were you going through when you came out? That was another thing that he said about Fred Rogers was, you know, most people would have stepped away. Mm-hmm. And he said, did you grow up as one of my neighbors? And he said when he saw him, his name is Anthony Resnick, and I think it's Bresnikan. He said he felt like crying when he asked if he knew that it was his neighbor. And he said, yeah, I was a neighbor. And so he opens his arms, he got a hug, and he said, it's good to see you again. And he got to hug Mr. Rogers. Ha, ha, ha.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I love that.
I know, it's not done yet. He says, he paused, he undid his scarf, and he sat down on the ledge. He said, what was upsetting you? And he said, well, I told him my grandfather had just died. And he was one of the few things I had, and I felt adrift. Mm-hmm. And so there he is. He unloads that on Fred Rogers.
Oh, my gosh.
Telling about his grandfather and a boat that he bought him as a kid. So here they go on and on. He said, he asked how long that his grandfather had died, and he said it was a couple months. And his grandfather, of course, was gone for decades. But this thing was that Mr. Rogers, the icon, stepped mm-hmm. out a person and basically envelop him in this wonderful little gift of grace and just compassion and empathy with those words in a moment of his life where he was having some second thoughts and some doubt and just really feeling adrift and lost. So that in that moment, I could see the rainbows.
Oh my gosh, yes. Gosh, that's such a beautiful story. And all it took for Mr. Rogers was just a moment or two.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, to be that loving.
To acknowledge. Yes. That's why right now, even though there's all this upheaval and all that's going on, your book brings people a way of connecting to their own inner self. And if they want to have a reading with you and you can help them connect dots, that's helpful too. But by using their own talents, their own gifts, their own things that maybe they've set aside or said, well, this isn't good enough. It's good enough for you. It's good because nobody knows your code. Nobody knows what your symbols are. It's like that little paper I saw this morning. I thought, oh my gosh, these are symbols. This is language. And it's really so completely unimpressive. It's just like commas, dots, little scroll.
Yeah, I love it though. I love that you had that vision.
Yeah, well, it made sense for today. It made sense for today that we all have these internal prompts that when the time is right, they come out and they remind us that this is just completely limitless, the access that we have to our own knowing and our own whatever we need, lessons, toolbox. You know, it's there. Just sometimes it takes the prompt. And with you, I thought it was so funny. My gosh, you got so many bad psychics.
Oh. Yeah, well, you know, and we just have people that love to exploit each other. They're on that dimension of being, and they really don't want to love and help as much as get something out of you.
Oh.
You know, and that's sad, but I guess there are dimensions of being, and I don't think, for me, I don't choose that. I don't want to be in that way, and I don't want people who feel vulnerable to be subjected to that. because we're all vulnerable, just like the young man, you know, having a hard time. And Mr. Rogers could have ignored him or exploited him,
yeah,
in some way, yeah. And he didn't do either.
Oh, he just opened up and let go of the thing that was hurting his heart. You know, his heart mm-hmm. was obviously hurt, and here was something that made him feel good for just a few moments.
It changed his life, I'm sure. I mean,
absolutely.
for the second time, and what a gift to actually be able to encounter that. That's a huge affirmation to be able to see someone that you really looked up to as a kid.
Yes. Yes. And that was what was going on today when all this tragedy is happening, and he's mm-hmm. saying, well, that
he, mm-hmm.
what would he do? And his mom said this, and then that tied into, you know, to Fred Rogers.
I'm going to remember that quote, because you said that the mother would say to him, look for the helpers. There will always be the helpers. And that is the only way to do it. So we'll connect. We'll keep connecting with, and that net that we will form as we connect with the intention of empathy and loving one another, it has to be more powerful than some of the awful things we're seeing unfold, which is just the total lack of love, really. It's so sad to have it, you know, happening the way it is.
But you get what you focus on, and that's part of it. Throughout history, there have been horrific events, horrific mm-hmm. things that we have done to each other as human beings. And then there's a way that we still continue to evolve. And so each time, it's that turn the other cheek thing that says, what will I present? What will I bring forward out of this? How will I go beyond this and put another lift back into the equation? And the quote is from Fred Rogers. I'll send you the link, because
I love it. Thank you.
They consolidated it and put his stuff after it was, you know, all sorts of shared on Twitter.
Well, and I'll have to share with you, too, maybe through communicating, just the way in which that story is synchronistic for me.
Oh.
So, yeah, I have a story for you at some point.
Dang it. Yeah, we're almost out of time. That's not fair.
No, okay, that's okay. We'll do it. I'll tell you the story, and then if you want it to be a radio topic, then we'll do that. That would be fun.
Well, we can reconnect. That's not a problem.
Okay.
I want people to have a chance to connect with your book, especially if you are not a trained artist. This will give you, I think, a little more support and a little more inspiration to draw anyway.
Absolutely. You're a natural born mark maker. You do not have to be trained in any way. You already are born with this ability to make mark. It's the most innate. It's as easy as breathing and as natural, because we are born creators. So this isn't about right or wrong, or it's a good drawing or a bad drawing. It's a process. It's an intuitive visual process. So it has nothing to do with judgment of any kind. It's a fun exploration.
The technique that you bring to it, when you draw these little squiggles and these little loop-de-loops and curls and swirls as you go through this streaming, then you go back and put colors and fill in the spots that were open and circles and half circles and swirls. And all of a sudden something comes through that's actually maybe a face or a person, or like you did with the woman who had a grandmother with one leg. All of a sudden those things came together, and there you are. You fill in the blanks. And so that, I think, is a technique that's very empowering and very
yes.
very
it's
unique.
It's something we can develop. It's a visual intuitive language, you know, where we can look. I call it gazing, because it's a daydreaming way of looking, where you see spiritually more with your third eye. It opens the third eye. And as you gaze, mm-hmm. things may look like something, or just the way lines and shapes come together, it may just give you a feeling or remind you of something, and you don't rationally know why, and you don't have to. You just trust it and, you know, jot a little note down. But we have to want to have that inner dialogue and develop that language, just like we develop any other language. We have to kind of take care of that by going into it.
Well, and part of that is there's always a right place and right time. And even if it seems like life is too crowded and too overwhelming, it doesn't take much to pick up a pen and draw a circle.
Not at all. And you can do it, you know, just all day long at different intervals. And it feels, the release in it, even just for that alone, feels so good.
So, okay. And so you like with my little, the little poster full of dots and squiggles and curly cues and all that. It's,
yes.
it's, it means something to us, no matter if nobody else has to read it. It's just something that we can do. It's kind of the equivalent of spiritual shorthand.
Yes, that's so great. I love that term. Yeah. I'm intrigued by it, yeah, but by your description, because I often wake up in that hypnagogic state. I will see kind of what you described, where it's symbols and letters, and I know they're words, but I can't decipher them.
Yes.
So that I always wondered if it was the Akashic the soul records being opened up, and it's an ancient language or something. But after what you've said with your vision, I have to think about it some more. It's so much fun.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to have to go. Elaine Clayton is my guest. You can get on and find all of her drawings and creations at elaineclayton.com, or get the book. And the book is called Making Marks, Make Your Own Mark, all right, with a swirl. See ya.